You are listening to KZYX, and this is the first ever show for Rural Resilience. I am your host, Allison Bailey, and today we are going to talk about what puts a child at risk. And we have several shows in store for you regarding children in Mendocino County, and this is the first. And today we have with us Menica Olson and Townley Say from First Five Mendocino. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you so much.
Wonderful. So I know that the idea of what puts a child at risk is extremely broad. So we're going to kind of pare it down, really get sort of specific as far as your organization and what services you provide as well. So to begin, Menica, would you tell us a little bit about what First Five Mendocino is?
Absolutely. First Five Mendocino is an organization whose mission is to support and serve children under the age of five, but also their caregivers and also their families in Mendocino County. We receive tobacco tax funding from the state of California, and actually every county receives a portion of that tax that the state collects.
Excellent.
And then each county uses that funding directed by an independent commission, and that the commission is made up of local professionals, and then they make decisions on how to best spend those dollars locally.
Okay.
So that's really nice.
So local professionals, tell me a little bit more about where they're from, like what organizations.
So our organization has some that are... what is it? They're mandated.
They're mandated by the state.
Certain, like, so we have a director or I think it's a director of health and human services or assistant director, something like that.
Some representation.
A board of supervisors member, one, is supposed to be on our commission. And I think that's all the requirements that we have.
And then we prefer, like, medical.
And then we'd like to have a medical provider, a child care provider. We like to...
Educator.
Mm-hmm. We like just to kind of cover the gamut of services that touch children.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So, yeah.
The full spectrum of what they're going to see in that point in their life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. And our commission has currently decided that we'll focus our supportive programs to decrease substance abuse and increase the quality of parenting in order to build more resilient families in our county.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excellent. So as far as substance abuse goes, how is that affecting families? Is it minimal? Why is that the focus, I guess, is what I'm after.
Well, when you start looking at what causes child abuse and neglect, and you look at those rates across the state, and then you break them down into the Mendocino County, our rates of abuse, child abuse and neglect, are much higher than our state average, as well as our substance abuse rates. So those two are actually, they're called coefficients, they're codependent on one another. So that, in and of itself, the substance abuse is contributing to the child abuse and neglect rates, and we have a higher sense of that. So because of how related they are, our commission decided to work on both simultaneously. So if we can increase parenting, increase awareness, and encourage parents to be more present with their children, typically what parents are making healthier choices, which means that they're staying away from substance abuse and not using those substances. So they are, if you can increase parenting, it's going to have also a negative effect and reduce the effects of substance abuse amongst parents of young children. So that's how those two are really interrelated in our community.
Okay, yeah, excellent. If we could move further into this, are you working with drug programs for adults in the county and really involved in that?
So as Menica mentioned, we First Five Mendocino is not really into direct services, and we'll get more into our services, okay. And then we can go into that. Mm-hmm. But we do put money towards 4th Street program, and we do prioritize parents who are having children, parenting children age 0 to 5. We prioritize their enrollment into substance abuse programs in Mendocino County.
Wonderful.
So if a parent is wanting to get clean, they want to actually go through a program, they can contact 4th Street, and that we give them, we just fund them. It's not something that comes through First Five Mendocino. We just give the money to 4th Street. They know what the money's for, and they use the, they prioritize that enrollment for that, that parent.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I know obviously that you serve children under five and mm-hmm. And their families, but where do these children come from? Like, where do most of these families come from that you serve?
Well, since we see ourselves more as a connector mm-hmm. and a funder of services and a trainer. So we don't necessarily bring families into our agency to do work with them one-on-one. First Five services are more distributed throughout the county through different or other organizations or family resource centers, for example. So to answer your question, you're asking, you know, how do families find us, or how do we get the services to families? So by being a connector of services, for example, we would make sure that families and other organizations that serve families know about the resources that we have mm-hmm. that can help a family. And then we make sure that those resources are stocked, are updated, are, you know, appropriate and haven't been mm-hmm. recalled or, you know, any kind of thing like that. And then we distribute the resources. Agencies contact us more primarily.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I understand. Great. So, since you work through all of these various agencies, which agencies do you tend to connect with most?
I think primarily the Community Health and Human Services agencies, mm-hmm. Especially with it has to do with like parenting or what have you, mm-hmm. parenting trainings and that kind of stuff for their staff. But we also are involved with Women, Infant, and Children, the WIC program mm-hmm. throughout the counties. Mm-hmm. As Minika mentioned, all of the family resource counties, we have like 8 in the county, so mm-hmm. we directly will give them resources and information.
And funding,
mm-hmm. yes. And the clinics and pediatricians, mm-hmm. The libraries, mm-hmm. we have, you know, supports at the libraries, and we do trainings and offers mm-hmm. and offer a lot of different training opportunities for the librarians, the children's librarian. We also make sure that there's someone going in for the bilingual reading time at the
we do that at the Ukiah Library.
Ukiah mm-hmm. Library. I know we've tried doing it at the Willits Library a little bit too.
And the Coast has mm-hmm. had it, and mm-hmm. I think we're working on setting that up.
Yeah.
Also with educators.
Yep, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Early childhood educators, mm-hmm. preschoolers, mm-hmm. preschool education places. Mm-hmm.
State preschools, and Head Starts, NCO, lots
daycare
of
providers.
Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. really broad. That's mm-hmm. excellent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, how can our community find out when these trainings are happening or mm-hmm. various services? Is there like a central calendar, or mm-hmm. is it dependent on the agency? What, mm-hmm. how does that work?
A lot of the training opportunities happen. Minika and I will collaborate and communicate depending on what the training is for and what the desired audience is for. Mm-hmm. So we've offered trainings in a model called the community resiliency model training. And for that one, we did kind of earmark and target a certain specific audience. And so then we would go directly to that agency or that demographic of professionals or paraprofessionals we would like to, and kind of just tell them about the training and that kind of stuff and solicit interest. For the parenting program that we train people for, it's an evidence-based training program called the Triple P, the Positive Parenting Program. That's Triple P, three P's. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that has been our accepted evidence-based parenting program from child welfare. So if they're social workers, if they're parent partners, if they're social worker assistants, need any kind of training in that, then I directly correlate with and talk to them, basically. Okay. And give them the training calendar, all the different levels of Triple P, and so that I connect with them individually, as well as the foster adoptive agencies like Redwood Community Services mm-hmm. and Tapestry as well. So we also train those professionals as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So we would, when we have a training, we will post it on our Facebook page. Mm-hmm. We also have a Raise and Shine or Triple P Mendocino County Facebook page, which would have specific information about mm-hmm. parenting. And then we also have a website for the Raise and Shine program, which does the Triple P, and also the First Five Mendocino website as well.
Those are all linked together. Mm-hmm. So if you find one website, you can easily link and jump to the other website. So yeah, they're very interchangeable. Yeah. Right now we're having most of our parent trainings. So we have parent groups, and so if a parent wants information, like how do I improve my parenting skills? If I want to find out how to deal with tantrums or what have you, all of those parenting groups are on our Raise and Shine website. And then the trainings for facilitators are primarily just usually on like an Eventbrite or what have mm-hmm. you, but we link them all.
Very mm-hmm. good. Mm-hmm. So aside from substance use, what do you find puts a child at risk, especially ages 0 through 5?
If I could first mm-hmm. say, mm-hmm. One of the reasons why... almost 20 years ago, the state lawmakers at the time decided, and this was this movement was actually spearheaded by Rob Reiner, who's an actor, director, mm-hmm. Producer probably as well, to provide parents with resources, provide an ability to find out, how can I help my child? He was a grandfather, and he realized, there's all these books. Is everyone reading these books? There's books about how to do this, how to do that. And he says, I don't think everyone's reading these books. And from there, the movement kind of began. And the reason is that before a child turns 6, 90% of their brain has been developed. And that is a significant, significant amount. I know. People are very surprised. And so the early years for a growing child are extremely important for their future success and health. The brain is the ultimate use it or lose it machine, if you will, right? The parts of the brain that grow and the parts that do not grow depend on a baby's experience day to day. So the outside world is food for the brain to grow. So if the baby is experiencing variety of things, the parent is talking to them, they're learning about, these are different colors, look at this one is red, let's count how many crackers I'm going to give you today, 1, 2, 3, 4. All of that information is food for the baby's brain to grow. And so those early years present a time when a baby is at its most vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And so we define when is a child most vulnerable as the early years, because of that significant brain growth. If we want a child and adult to reach their fullest potential, we want to give them everything that we can to grow that seed, if you will. I know this is a metaphor that's used often when we talked about children, but to grow it into the strongest and healthiest tree that can possibly be achieved. And so if we can define a vulnerable child as all children who are at that earliest stage, that's what we advocate for. That's what we try to do. And furthermore, I would say that in a time in a baby's life between the 0 and 1 is one of the most mm-hmm. vulnerable times in a person's life, but also when they retire is also a very vulnerable time.
Absolutely.
And the 0 to 1 time is because they don't have a voice, they can't talk.
Mm-hmm.
And
they
can't advocate for themselves. Mm-hmm. They can't tell a teacher that something's wrong. They can't go and talk to a doctor when something's wrong. And so that is a very, very key time. And there are estimates that there are the highest numbers of child abuse at that time,
yep.
between
Absolutely.
0 and 1.
Mm-hmm. And so, as Monica said, that defines who is at risk, because there's so much at stake in the 0 to 5. That puts them at the highest risk. Mm-hmm. So if a parent is not engaging with their child, if a parent is not able to connect with their child or provide, simple resources of food, warmth, and shelter, much less interaction of verbal and emotional cues, then that risk factor increases dramatically. Mm-hmm. And the consequences for success in that child's life actually, they grow. I mean, they mm-hmm. reduce quite a bit. So that is why First Five was created and the name Focus. And so when you talk about at risk, it's that those early, early years. I mean, even if you look on any websites, like the first 4 years mm-hmm. Are the most, when a child is most victimized, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of that first year and how at risk people are, Do you do anything for postpartum depression? Like, do you have any programs for that, any funding for that?
That is a good question. I'm trying to think. We don't have something that targets postpartum depression currently directly. However, we would... It is a topic that we discuss often and are looking for ways to provide those services. And as I said, we often see ourselves as a trainer or a provider of trainings. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that can be one of the best ways in a rural community that an organization can help, I guess I should say, shore up the level of expertise of the professionals in the community, is bring in people that can help give the latest mm-hmm. information.
Yes.
About what warning signs, what are you looking for when we're looking for postpartum depression, or and some doctors or medical providers might not know what those cues are. So that is something that we continue to look at. Yes.
Excellent. So do you work with any organizations outside of Mendocino County? Because I know there's First Five, you know, is not just exclusive to us.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit about just the organization kind of on a broader spectrum?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So since there is a First Five in every county in the state, we do participate in something called the First Five Association. And in addition, we work closely with First Five California, which does serve the state on a broader level. Many people may have heard there is a campaign currently going on. I think it's in its second year, called Talk, Read, Sing, and that is a First Five California campaign. And so they provide us with resources to share that you mm-hmm. know, adds credibility to their already great mm-hmm. programming. And they put that on radio, TV, internet, in all communities. But in addition, Townley and I and other staffers at First Five, we will work closely with other First Fives that are close in our region. We have a lot of similarities to... we're mm-hmm. all in this northern rural region. And so just this last year, I set up some close work with First Five Butte County, and they were doing some resiliency trainings, and we were working on developing the messaging. How do we talk about ACEs? How do we talk about trauma so that we could be in line? Our counties have very similar statistics mm-hmm. in terms of trauma, adults who have experienced trauma and children who have experienced trauma. Also similarly with Shasta County mm-hmm. and Humboldt County and Trinity County, we have a lot of similarities. So we do communicate with the individuals at those First Fives, and just to kind of be on the same path and feel connected. In addition, Del Norte, we'll work with Del Norte there, and Sonoma as
well.
Just
to feel like you're not mm-hmm. such a, you know, this vacuum of just, you know.
Yes.
There are similar issues in similar counties, and how are other counties addressing them, and what strategies are other counties mm-hmm. using, not just with how, and also how other First Fives are using their funding, because as Monica said, the funding is independent and it's defined by the community needs. So, you know, we've done parenting and child and substance abuse, but some other counties have really focused on other things that the community needs, like mm-hmm. Humboldt. First Five Humboldt does a lot of play groups. They put mm-hmm. a lot of their funding in play groups, and that's how they're choosing to build their community efforts within families and that kind of stuff. So each First Five has their own focus, mm-hmm. but they're very similar, and they have a common thread that goes through all of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah. Thank you. So I'm hearing a theme here regarding rural counties.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any information on what it is that is putting our counties in such a situation where we're experiencing this trauma, which, you know, of course leads to a higher rate of substance use?
Mm-hmm.
What's happening to us?
I think it's a combination of a lot of different things. I think that when you put a family into a new situation, and they don't have resources or information on basic child development, and then you isolate them, you put them in a place, maybe that they're away from their own family members, away from their providers and medical providers, away from other community members to check in and see, like, what's normal, what's not normal, what's, you know, typical child development versus atypical. When do you take a child in for a referral?
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of that contributes to some of the risk factors that increases child abuse and neglect amongst children, as well as when you're isolated, it's hard to call out mm-hmm. on and identify substance abuse and actually physical abuse and domestic violence or what have you. So these things tend to perpetuate to a point of extreme before they're finally noticed and recognized by community members, or until a child starts going to school and is noticed by teachers and other peers and what have you, that, oh, this behavior is actually not normal or not healthy. This is not a healthy dynamic. And by that time, those first 5 years have already been kind of significantly shaped. So when you have rural communities that have a lack of resources, a lack of, you know, transportation, mm-hmm. Mendocino County is a very large county. So if you have a family who doesn't have transportation regularly to get to resources and are depending on other people bringing those resources in, then that isolation again mm-hmm. is perpetuated and contributes to significant, you know, postpartum depression and the development of mental illnesses. So I think that is one of the reasons why rural communities do suffer, and why you see those common threads of isolation and substance abuse in a lot of rural communities.
But if I could also mm-hmm, bring it back absolutely. To the brain development. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when a person is a child and they've experienced trauma, and that person grows up, if you are familiar with ACE's Adverse Childhood Experience Study, I might actually direct your listeners to Google Nadine Burke Harris's TED Talk on the subject. Mm-hmm. And what in that...
Burke Harris?
Burke. Sorry, Burke. Mm-hmm. Nadine Burke Harris works for the Center for Youth Wellness in San Francisco. And that agency is focused on increasing the awareness about ACEs. Because as she defines it, it's the number one public health crisis of our time. That people have experienced trauma as a child, and again, if 90% of their brain has developed before they're six, what has happened to their brain as they grow up to be an adult? And if that brain has been harmed, has mm-hmm. been not you know, fed, watered, given all the nutrients that a brain needs to grow, as I mentioned, when that person gets older, the brain is missing that flourishing growth that it could have.
It does not have the ability to self-regulate. It loses the ability to, you know, create the serotonin happy, mm-hmm. you know, happy hormone. So then it looks outside of mm-hmm. itself for, you know, something to encourage that. Mm-hmm. So alcohol, mm-hmm. drug abuse, or what have you. A person with a high score or high adversity has a higher rate of suicidality. You know, their mental health issues such as depression and anxiety as well. Because, and it's, you know, it changes the conversation to what's wrong with you, to what happened to you. Mm-hmm. What happened to you as a child that has shaped your biological framework to not be able to process mm-hmm. these maybe simple stresses of checking accounts and going to school and getting to work on time and handling, you know, interactions between your sibling or a care provider or a professional. So it breaks down and it complicates the very simple operations of adulting.
That's shines an incredible light on stigma and mm-hmm. also self-stigma. I mean, there's so many people in the mental health community who are experiencing mm-hmm. You know, mental illness who feel like it's their fault.
Right.
And they blame themselves.
Right.
And mm-hmm. why can't I be normal?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if we consider this, mm-hmm. then it's not what's wrong with you.
Right.
It's what happened to you.
Exactly.
And if we all can understand that we are all coming into this mm-hmm. day-to-day world, having all have experienced some form of adversity, whether our parents were divorced or one of our parents or significant others, like say an older brother was incarcerated for a period of time when mm-hmm. I was a child, any of these things can cause a ripple effect mm-hmm. in the child's developing brain and contribute to an adversity as they get older. That is not to say that a person can't learn strategies and ways to overcome that and think to themselves, okay, it's morning, I have a hard time getting up, I'm going to prepare my lunch the night before. It's not to say that they can't figure out strategies to get themselves through their day, strategies to figure out how to not take that drink or not go reach for that drug that has been a problem for them before. But it is to say that let's understand and kind of greet each other with mm-hmm. that understanding. Mm-hmm. Let me give you some help. Let me give you some tips. Let me give you some cushion because what has happened to you?
And I think that really bleeds into the community resources, right? So if you can broaden that concept of like what's happened to you versus why, then you can actually start building programs, community programs that are driven mm-hmm. to address the what has happened mm-hmm. versus the why. Like, this happened, and so we can build a program of literacy, of parental education, of connection, of community events that actually build in and start to offer mm-hmm. some form of resiliency mm-hmm. and some form of, like, ways that people, teaching people how to cope, mm-hmm. right? So giving some life skills in areas. And to be the break that cycle of abuse and neglect that happens, mm-hmm. I mean, that's ideally the issue. Because, you know, what has happened to me as a child, I definitely don't want to perpetuate and have it happen to my children. And they're going to have their own adversity in their own areas. But being that ripple of change, being that ripple of resiliency as well, mm-hmm. because both of them ripple out across the mm-hmm. community. So it starts with individuals to owning it and then seeking out. And then also the responsibility, I think, of communities and counties to figure out, like, what the community needs are. And I think, again, just cycling back to First Five Mendocino, that's our goal. And that's why we work so closely with agencies, because working with one individual is great, but if we can get agencies to see, like, how can you best meet the community needs with this understanding, with this overall umbrella thought of, it's not, you know, why this is going on, but this has happened, and how do we respond to it in effective ways that create a ripple of resiliency versus continued trauma?
Yeah, excellent. I think that appropriate response and an action, as opposed to just working on theory and pointing the fingers, is absolutely huge.
It creates a change of, like, okay, so do we do therapy or do we do punitive action? Mm-hmm. Like, right. in the legal system, and you know, in the foster care system, and in even the parenting and the educational system, you know. So do teachers send a child to the counselor when they're acting out, or do they send them home on suspension? Mm-hmm. It's that those attitudes that agencies can have that build resiliency, and changing protocols and policies to respond to that and in more effective ways. That equals a community resiliency. So you have individual resiliency, mm-hmm. but then you also have communities of resiliency. And as we look at, you know, collectively, these other partnering rural communities, we're all kind of trending to this, okay, what are these community policies happening, and how are we as a community building resiliency, not just on that individual level, but on that agency level?
Well, absolutely. And you know, as you said before, people are so isolated. It's, you know, we as a community are all we have. Mm-hmm. We have to really shore it up and tighten the safety net.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely, yes. Because if an adult then gets to a time when they are a parent and then they have a child and they don't have the access or the connection to those mm-hmm. resources, then they are at risk for repeating the cycle that they've encountered. Liz Townley mentioned she doesn't want her children to experience the same adversity that she had as a child, but she is aware of that adversity, and she is aware of seeking out other ways to flip that switch or flip that mm-hmm. narrative for mm-hmm. her mm-hmm. own family. Mm-hmm. And if we're talking about in rural communities, if I could just summarize, then mm-hmm. we have to find ways to get to those parents so that they can have that same awareness, so that they can find the sources of resilience in their own right. in their own homes, in their own communities. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what I love about the Triple P program. Working with that parent education and seeing the lights turn on in a parent. I've worked with teenage parents who, you know, we talk about that narrative, you know, a 3-week-old crying, and the mom's, I'm asking the teen mom, like, well, why do you think he's crying? He's bored. I'm like, okay, so you really think a child is bored when they're crying and they're 3 weeks old. So what else could that crime mean? And asking that parent to really think about, where did that question come from? Why did your response to a crying infant be boredom versus, do they have a hair tied around their little toe and they're crying? Are they hungry? Are they cold? Are they, you know, is their diaper on too tight? Like, is there any other reason that a child could be crying? And so helping that parent, not just saying, well, have you, you know, giving them clues to look at, have you fed them lately, asking those very obvious questions that most providers would ask, but asking the parent, well, what else do you think that the child could be crying because of? What other things have you looked for? You know, so instead of giving those answers, really planting that seed for the parent to explore that inner narrative that is so natural that we refer back to, and having them challenge that on themselves. You know, and so that's what the Triple P program really does, and it helps them have that self-efficacy and that self-confidence to, like, I have the answers, I do know, versus I don't know and I'm just going to fall back on what was done and not really have that reflective moment.
Oh, that's excellent that you're asking people to really think for themselves. Mm-hmm. And are there any prompts that you could give our listeners now as far as, you know, what they could ask themselves in a certain situation? Anything that mm-hmm. that is kind of a common pitfall that you think that maybe would be helpful to them?
I think it's good for everybody to challenge the statement of, I was raised this way and I turned out okay. I think that, yes, we all got here for whatever reasons that we got here, but I think it's always good to challenge ourselves. It's like, I was, you know, beaten with a belt and I was spanked and I'm okay, you know? Yeah, but what would your life look like if you weren't ever spanked and if you weren't beaten with a belt? Like, what would that look like? You know, that would be the challenge. So, okay, so what would it look like? You know, like, if that didn't happen to me, I'm sure something else would happen, but, you know, what if I was taught to identify my emotions versus respond to them, you know, wholeheartedly, you know, with the first response that came to mind. So I would just challenge parents to say, you know, I was raised that way and it worked for me, because I think that there's a lot of reflection in that. Like, a lot of things did work, but there's also oftentimes a lot of things that didn't work. And so we could look at what didn't work as well.
Very good. So are there any particular groups within the community, within the county, who you feel like you really wish you could contact more, that there was more outreach for, that you don't feel like are really being served to their need at this point?
Oh, there are always. Yes, definitely. And I'm sure, just as an example, one of our most popular programs called Imagination Library, we send a book a month in the mail to children.
And my son did it.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Until they turn 5. And right now we have about 3,200 children under the age of 5 enrolled. And by our estimates, that's about 65% of the children that is targeting. Now, you know, providing a book in the home is a great way to put a book in a child's hand. You know that child's going to walk around that house with the book and saying, somebody read it to me now. Somebody, please. and we love that, because then they sit down, there's a quiet moment, the parent or older sibling or cousin or auntie or friend is sitting with the child and giving them undivided attention. They're experiencing the story and the beauty of the book together. And that's a wonderful thing, and it's a great way that families can build a routine and resilience into the home, and which is why we've continued to fund it for, I think that we're going on the 9th year now. But, like I said, there's only 65% of the children. So, and that's one of the easiest ways into a home, is sending a book and putting mm-hmm. it in the mailbox. But we often lose families. They might move, and we might lose their address, and so we can't continue to give that child books. But that's just an example. We know that there are families out there who, you know, haven't read a newspaper. So a press release that I send to a newspaper, you know, about right. a Triple P right. or about the fact that January is mm-hmm. Positive Parenting Awareness Month, they might not get it. They might not turn on KZYX, so they might not hear this this program. we don't have an app. We don't have, mm-hmm. We do have Facebook, but unless somebody likes us, they might not see us, right? So mm-hmm. there are challenges in a rural community where I don't have bus stops on every corner, right, to put ads that say talk, read, sing. There aren't buses. There aren't taxis. There aren't, right? We don't have like a canvas, you know, to display our message, or, you know, we don't have airplanes that could write, you know, in the sky, right? So yes, there are always parents that we wish we could get this information to. And so in a rural community, I think one of our strengths is word of mouth, mm-hmm. and people sharing information that they hear, and learning how to share that in a soft and encouraging way, I think. So that's our job. That's our challenge. Every individual in this county has a challenge and a responsibility to a parent and to a child nearby that they know. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's important for, like you said, you know, that word of mouth, you know, and I think that as gaps in services are recognized and we can figure out how to fill them, and I think collectively creating a collective voice to take them to the county offices and not just say, you know, we need funding for this. We want to prioritize maybe a home visiting program that really targets, you know, families right from the get-go, so children are getting served, mm-hmm. and having someone in the home and noticing, you know, if a child's gaining weight effectively, mm-hmm. or if there's
if someone's smoking cigarettes in the home, or
yeah.
unsafe environment.
If there's mm-hmm. food in the home, does the mm-hmm. home have adequate, you know, warmth and that kind of stuff? So mm-hmm. creating some kind of ongoing resource for that early check-in would be fabulous.
Yes, yes. And in that early, most vulnerable years. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that would be excellent if home health got involved more. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see home health a lot for recovering from surgery, mm-hmm. or in hospice care, mm-hmm. but usually not nearly so much as within that, you know, with the new baby in that first 5 years.
That was something that was provided many years ago and is now starting up again as we speak.
Really? And,
yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. The county, Mendocino County Health and Human Services Public Health Department is working with Healthy Families America, and they're working on, let's see, mm-hmm. they've started with the most at-risk families, because they have very limited staff, and they started with some funding and collaboration with First Five Mendocino, because as you said, it is very important. To get in the home as early as possible, and so I think they have begun some home visits. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do you know how parents or families could sign up for that service?
I would start with the public health department, definitely, and the WIC. There are, I think, 4 public health nurses for the whole county right now. And there may be 1 on the coast. So they are starting with a very small number, mm-hmm. and that's what Healthy Families America, which is an evidence-based program that's providing the training and the curriculum, and here's what you do when you go in the home, and they've gone through training over the last year. It's been quite extensive.
Yeah.
And they said, if to be successful, start small, and then they will add staff, and then they can branch out. So yes, definitely families can contact the public health department to find out more about that.
That's excellent. And I want to build off of something you said just a couple of minutes ago when you were talking about word of mouth and expressing that in a gentle and helpful way.
Mm-hmm.
So say some of our listeners are concerned about parents right now, and they're wanting to get them services. What would be some things that they could say, or ways to phrase that information that would not come across as critical?
Mm-hmm. You're looking at me.
Yeah.
if a parent was listening to this program and they had a family that they were concerned about.
Or even a neighbor.
Or a neighbor, or what have you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would put myself in proximity of them. So oftentimes when we see families struggling or a neighbor struggling, we will step back and judge, mm-hmm. instead of stepping forward and advocating and getting within proximity of that person. I think that the rural communities struggle with a few things. You have a tight-knit community, and if you're within that tight-knit community, then you have a lot of support and you kind of know where to go. But if you're on the fringe, or if you're on the outskirts of that tight-knit community, it's very hard to kind of break in, and you can be isolated. So I would encourage people to just get in proximity of a family that might be you perceiving as struggling. Because also, are we judging that person? I would ask a person to say, okay, well, what do I see the family in need of? And then how can I be of service to that family? And maybe it's cooking a meal. Maybe it's just spending some time with them. Maybe it's just asking those questions of like, you know, how are you doing? You know, so many times when we hear a neighbor yelling, they're stressed out. We hear the, you know, we've all had that neighbor. When I brush my children's hair, I am that neighbor. we all have those moments. So I encourage people to ask questions and just say, hey, you know what? Sounds like you're having a rough day. Can I get you a cup of coffee? Can I take the kids for a walk around the block for a minute for mm-hmm. you so you can take some deep breaths and calm down or what have you? Not even that, just not that forward. But, you know, you would just, I would encourage people to get in proximity and observe with an open mind and not a judgmental mind. Mm-hmm. Because as parenting is, I never give parenting advice. Even though I run the parenting education program, people have to want to come to it. Mm-hmm. People have to want, there's a lots of unsolicited advice there. So instead of coming with an agenda of, I'm going to tell them what mm-hmm. they need to do, go with an agenda of an open mind, a compassionate heart, and observe and see what is going on really mm-hmm. before making a judgment call. Because parenting is the hardest, most unrewarded event anybody will ever get the chance to do. It's unrewarded as far as like, you know, no one's going to pay you to do it. Mm-hmm. But you get the reward of the love of the children and obviously like that. So I feel like there's a lot of judgment happening on parents mm-hmm. and parents are doing the best that they can do with what they have. And so I would inquire, what do you have and what do I need to mm-hmm. help you get
yeah.
more of?
Yeah, I love that. What do you have? Yes.
Yeah. I would advise, you know, mm-hmm. for example, like if you're in a grocery store and you see a parent and they're just ignoring the child that's screaming, mm-hmm. it's okay to ask that child, how's it going? Mm-hmm. Say hi to the parent. Right. It breaks that struggle that right. that parent and that child are in at the moment. We don't know what it is. The child
we don't
could
know.
Be asking for something that the parent has said no. And the this is the child's
right.
way to say, I don't agree with your no. mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
And that parent has said, I'm not going to engage. Fine.
Right.
Fine. But if you can just kind of help that parent, they're totally embarrassed. We know they are having a
right.
really hard time.
Yes. Yes.
It's okay to say, hey, how's it going? What school do you go to?
Right.
You know, what books do you like to read? Mm-hmm. Just ask a little introductory question. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed it's raining a lot lately? Anything to kind of break that tension, and it can help.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, it sounds like you have, both of you, a lot of personal insight into what you do. And if you wouldn't mind telling me, how did you both get into this work?
That's a good question. I was that parent that was struggling with a very headstrong 3-year-old who's now 13 and still headstrong. And I was pregnant with my second child. And I had a friend who said, you know, would you like to get out of the house a couple hours a day? Because I know that at First Wide Mendocino, they need a little bit of extra help launching some programs. And so I started as the communications assistant, and now I'm the communications manager, and the only thing that my two kids know is First Five, because that's I did that. I brought my baby to work with me about 6 weeks after he was born, and he stayed with me in the office, breastfed, everything mm-hmm. In the office, and that's all he's known. He's had triple P discipline lessons with various staff that are mm-hmm. trained in triple P, and we've done work and made changes, and I learned the strategies, and so yeah, that's how I came into it. It was by a friend reaching out and saying, you're struggling with that 3-year-old that's really pulling at you constantly. Maybe you need to get out of the house. And it was real help. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm very grateful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Similar but different. Minica brought me actually into First Five Mendocino. I used to have a baby store, a business called Mendocino Baby. It's still in Mendocino County. It's called Mendo Baby now. And I networked a lot. I'm also a certified doula. So I would go to births. And so I was in the birth community. But having the retail store, postpartum and maternal and pregnant women would come into the store and just talk like, how do I find this? How do I get this? And, you know, I would also see Minica come in and she would bring the Imagination Library signups into our store. And so I would, you know, encourage women to sign up to get the BRIC program. So we had that kind of referral process already in place. But I used to connect a lot with families through the retail store. And then First Buy was hiring and needed just some extra office help and that kind of stuff. And I fell into Triple P and doing the Positive Parenting Program and just fell in love with it. And it's really been transformative with my relationship with my children. I'm a loud person. And so people would always tell me, you yell at your kids a lot. And I was like, no, I don't yell at my kids. I'm just a loud person. And then I started doing Triple P. I was like, I'm always yelling at my kids. Gosh, you know, I'm still loud and expressive with my children, but I don't yell at them anymore. So I learned to talk in a way so they would listen. And that's what the program really gave me. And I love, you know, so I taught at the store when I still had it. And I would facilitate groups. Now I manage the program and train other facilitators to do the program and offer some peer support and helping parents engage and working through resistance and that kind of stuff. And my background is in early childhood education, so that was always kind of a real natural for me. But that's kind of how I got into it, just through the store and introduction with Menica, and then just through my own passion of like wanting to see a better way to do things, you know. And I feel like parenting, if you can start a parent and challenge their thinking and how they're doing things with their own children, you really do create a ripple change that affects mm-hmm. generations to come.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you. So you both just mentioned Triple P, so I think it's time to get into the finer points of that particular program. Yeah. So what are the kind of the tenets of it?
Triple P stands for the Positive Parenting Program, as I mentioned before, and it's really based on five principles. And everything that you do in Triple P is related to those five principles. And so it's having a safe, engaging environment for a child. So what does that mean? What does that look like? That looks like that the outlet covers are covered in your home, that the child can freely explore a room without having to be redirected every 2 or 3 seconds, mm-hmm. that it's safe for them to explore and learn about their environment. The second tenet is having a safe, positive learning environment. And what that means is the parent is paying attention to the child. So when the child is actually doing something that is good or not good, just is productive and is a desirable behavior, that the parent noticed that and points that out. Like, I really appreciate you sharing with your brother. I really appreciate you picking up your toys, what have you. So it's that positive learning environment. So they're learning how to react or how to behave through positive re-encouragement. And then having realistic expectations is a third tenet. And so being able to realize what is typical child development, what can I ask my 2-year-old to do versus what I'm asking my 8-year-old to do, and then also having realistic expectations on yourself as a parent. So if you're struggling with, you know, financial resources, housing resources, if you're not getting sleep at night, how effective are you as a parent in able to parent in a positive way? So being realistic on the expectations that we put on ourselves as parents as well. What's the other one? Assertive discipline is the fourth tenet. And so being assertive discipline really just looks like consistency. When a child misbehaves, you're addressing it right then. It's not the old adage of when your father gets home or when your mother gets home. Or assertive discipline is having consequences that meet the behavior. So it's not like you're taking, you know, the crayons away forever if they draw on the wall, because how is the child ever going to learn to draw on paper and not the wall whenever they get the crayons back, you know? Yes. It's not, you know, the whole adage of I'm taking the Legos away if I step on one and I'm throwing them all away. Not really going to throw them all away because they're very expensive and I want you to be able to have the experience of Legos. So assertive discipline is using consequences that meet the behavior and being consistent with the consequences that you lay down. So that means that every time that you play with your straw, I'm going to take your straw away. You know, so being mm-hmm. having that consistency, that you're creating a pattern of trust and expectancy. The child knows that if I do this, my parent is going to react in this very predictable way because they're consistent in that response.
Yeah, I always know where they stand.
And then the final tenet is taking care of yourself as a parent, which is probably the hardest thing for parents to actually learn, that they need to take care of themselves so they can continually take care of their children well. If you're not getting enough sleep, what needs to change in our sleep patterns so that parent is getting enough sleep at night? If they're not ever having any private time or alone time, what needs to be put in place so that parent can have a little bit extended quality time for themselves, so they can actually parent well? So everything that Triple P teaches are based on those five principles. So if it's an 8-week parenting course, we teach, you know, how to deepen a relationship with your child. What activities are you going to do to relate to your child, to build that relationship, so then you can know what to expect, mm-hmm. have realistic expectations, to respond assertively. And then there's also 15 strategies to manage misbehavior that, again, are all based on those five principles. Wonderful. So Triple P meets a parent wherever they are at. So not everybody needs to know all those things. Triple P is very intuitive.
Okay.
So it's not like none of it's new information. It's all been written before in every parenting book and every shelf on every library. But what it does is it breaks it down into pieces that are easy for parents to metabolize. Mm-hmm. And so if a parent is struggling with sleep issues or potty training or tantrums, a parent can reach out and get just a nugget of Triple P and then they're back on track and whatever. Or if a parent like this teenage parent who did not know that a 3-week infant child is not bored when they're crying, that parent needs more specific, detailed information on recognizing what the cues are of a struggling infant, how to connect, how to hold that baby. So it's, you know, attaching and creating a healthy attachment with their caregiver. More specific kind of information. So the whole spectrum of parenting is kind of provided within Triple P.
Okay. And where can guardians and parents access this training?
The Triple P Facebook page is actually the best place, because there we have all of the parent groups listed. Our RaiseAndShine.org website is great. For general information, Triple P America, Triple P, I think it's just TriplePorg actually. They have some great resources, and I believe our site is listed on there for international services as well. Or just call our First Five office.
That's a good question. It's 462-1233.
Mm-hmm.
And we can answer the phone with bilingual staff as well.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. How many different languages are available on that line?
We have two.
English and Spanish.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Also, I would encourage parents to, you know, every family resource center and all throughout our county have some form of a Triple P trained facilitator at their family resource center. So if you're on the coast and looking for parenting support, please reach out to your family resource center. There's Safe Passage on the coast.
In Fort Bragg.
There's the Action Network, which is on the south coast.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Healthy Start in Laytonville. We have one in Potter Valley. We have two in Ukiah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm forgetting one or two of them.
Round Valley,
thank you. So every family resource center has a Triple P trained facilitator. So regardless where you are in the county, you have easy, quick access to Triple P.
Wonderful. So to wind down here, and kind of open the floor and ask you to tell us and our listeners about anything that you would really like to emphasize. What do you think is the most important thing to mention about at-risk children and families in Mendocino County at this time?
Very interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
I think from a First Five perspective, I said in the beginning, it is important to realize that all the children are at risk because of their young age and their lack of a voice. What's important to understand about First Five is the rapid brain development, and that time does not ever come back. If we lose that opportunity to help shape positive experiences for our youngest children, then our work is doubled and tripled. There is some information, if someone is so inclined, from the Dr. Heckman. Mm-hmm. He's a Nobel Prize winning economist, mm-hmm. from, I believe, the University of Illinois, yes, mm-hmm. That states that the amount of investments that are put into early childhood programs, the investment is, I can't remember the exact number, but it is way, way, way higher if we invest early than if we try to target in later life, almost, you know, high school, adult prep things. A child that has had positive experiences when they're under the age of 5 will come to high school and meet those programs with a vigor and a preparedness that will set them up for a successful life. So, in terms of a first 5, what's important, mm-hmm. for I think people to remember, is to support these early programs. Support the early child care providers in your community and in your network of friends that you know. It is a tough job, but it is the most important job.
Definitely. I don't know how much more I could add to that, but absolutely, I think that anybody listening to this program and has the ability to attend a Board of Supervisors meeting that has, you know, any kind of agendized item on how to delineate funds in our county to services and programs that affect children is important to know. I think that tuning into not just your neighbor, but also what your local governments are doing and how are they prioritizing your taxes and how are they prioritizing the funds in your community and are they doing that to, are they going into an area of protecting those youngest and those most vulnerable, especially with everything that's happening, as far as, like, you know, programs and schools and what have you, getting, you know, there's some great ways that a person can go and just learn about not just First 5, but what's going on in the school district, what's going on in their library, what's going on at their health provider. You know, we have First 5 tickets, or what are they called, rec cards, that every, you know, early provider, pick them up, share them with a neighbor or what have you. Get involved. I think it's important that the best way to advocate for children who cannot advocate for themselves is be their voice.
Excellent. Perfect end note. Well, thank you very much, both of you, for being here. Mm-hmm. And we hope to help support First 5 Mendocino and continue to do good work with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
To find out more about First 5, go to bendochildren.org and tune in for our next show on Thursday, February 1st at 9 a.m. La da 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 da.